In the Sweet, Dry, and Dry by Christopher Morley and Bart Haley. Dedication and Foreword. Dedication. Dedicated to G.K. Chesterton, most delightful of modern Decanterbury pilgrims. Foreword. As far as this book is concerned, the public may take it, or the public may let it alone, but the authors feel it their duty to say that no deductions as to their own private habits are to be made from the story here offered. With its composition they have beguiled the moments of the Valley of the Shadow. Acknowledgement should be made to the Evening Public Ledger of Philadelphia for permission to reprint the ditty included in Chapter 6. The public will forgive this being only a brief preface, for at the moment of writing the time is short, wishing you a merry abstinence, and looking forward to meeting you some day in Europe. Christopher Morley, Bart Haley, Philadelphia, 10 minutes before midnight, June 30, 1919. End of dedication and foreword. In the Sweet, Dry, and Dry by Christopher Morley and Bart Haley. Chapter 1. Mystery of the Unexpected Julep. Dunraven Bleak, the managing editor of the Evening Balloon, sat at his desk in the center of the local room, under a furious cone of electric light. It was 6 o'clock of a warm summer afternoon. He was filling his pipe and turning over the pages of the final edition of the paper, which had just come up from the press room. After the turmoil of the day, the room had quieted. Most of the reporters had left, and the shaded lamps shone upon empty tables and a floor strewn ankle-deep with papers. Nearby sat the city editor, checking over the list of assignments for the next morning. From an adjoining kennel issued occasional deep groans and a strong whiff of savage shag tobacco, blown outward by the droning gust of an electric fan. These proved the cartoonist, a man whose sprightly drawings were born to an obbligato of vehement blasphemy, was at work within. Mr. Bleak was just beginning to recuperate from the incessant vigilance of the day's work. There was an unconscious pathos in his lean, desiccated figure as he rose and crossed the room to the green glass drinking fountain. After the custom of experienced newspapermen, he rapidly twirled a makeshift cup out of a sheet of copy paper. He poured himself a draught of clear but rather tepid water, and drank it without noticeable relish. His lifted head betrayed only the automatic thankfulness of the domestic fowl. There had been a time when 6 o'clock meant something better than a paper goblet of lukewarm filtration. He sat down at his desk again. He had loaded his pipe sedulously, with an extra fine blend, which he kept in his desk drawer for smoking, during rare moments of relaxation when he had leisure to savor it. As he reached for a match, he was meditating a genial remark to the city editor, when he discovered that there was only one tan sticker in the box. He struck it, the blazing head flew off upon the cream-colored thigh of his Palm Beach suit. His naturally placid temper, undermined by 30 years of newspaper work and 2 years of prohibition, flamed up also. With a loud scream of rage and a curse against Sweden, he leapt to his feet and shook the glowing cinder from his person. Facing him, he found a stranger who had entered the room quietly and unobserved. This was a huge man, clad in a sober uniform of gray cloth, with silver buttons and silver braid. A Sam Brown belt of wide blue leather marched across his extensive diagonal in a gentle curve. The band of his visored military cap showed the initials CPH in silver embroidery. His face, broad and clean-shaven, shone with a luster which was partly warmth and partly simple friendliness. Save for a certain humility of bearing, he might have been taken for the liveried doorman of a moving picture theater or exclusive millinery shop. In one hand he carried a very large black leather suitcase. "Is this Mr. Bleak?" he asked politely. "Yes," said the editor in surprise. His secret surmise was that someone had died and left him a legacy which would enable him to retire from newspaper work.